Welcome to the Life in the City podcast from Antioch Community Church in Northeast Minneapolis, where we explore what it looks like to be a loving family inviting all people into the life-changing way of Jesus Christ. We're glad you're here.
Hey, Antioch, welcome back to the Life in the City podcast. This is Rachel Love.
And I'm Coley Wadija.
And we have another guest in the makeshift studio with us today.
In his own office, actually, technically speaking.
Yeah, we've been taking over his office lately for recording, but we have Pastor Andy O'Rourke with us today. So welcome, Andy.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me be part of this podcast.
Yeah, our hope today is to grill you on all the really deep theological questions. We're going to talk about like eternal conscious torment. We're going to talk about predestination. Oh, wait,
yeah, we have 1 month left, so we want to get it all out of our system today.
Awesome. Let's go for it.
Hey, you've got all these books for something, right? No, but for real, like we have a month left of you being our lead pastor, and we just wanted to give you an opportunity to share with us, but also give the listeners of Antioch a chance to kind of hear your heart and just kind of what you're looking forward to. It's not just about looking back, but about looking forward. But before we do that, I do want to look back because you were the planting pastor of Antioch, and you've been here for basically 15 years now. So how did that happen? How did you get to Minneapolis, planting here in the cities, starting Antioch, all of that?
Yeah, my wife Sarah and I were celebrating this December. It'll be 23 years that we've been married. And we moved to Minnesota in December of 2001 when I finished up school at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. And we moved to Minnesota to a rural town named Glenwood, about 2 hours northwest of the Twin Cities, to start a church there. In December of 2001, we moved to Glenwood, Minnesota, 2 hours northwest of the Twin Cities, and we went there to start a church, to plant a church. And they already had a core team of, I think, six families at that time who I interviewed with and candidated with and hired me to come and be their church planter. And we did that. We moved there and we were there. I was the pastor of Hope Community Church, it was called, in the Glenwood, Starbuck, Minnewaska area for 4 years. And an opportunity to move down here to the Twin Cities came up. And initially, that was to go on staff with our district office with the Free Church here in Minnesota and to help out with leadership development and training young leaders, especially, you know, the next generation. Mm-hmm. And part of the idea behind that was that would lead eventually to a church plant among next gen young adults in the city that valued training up leaders, multiplying leaders, that had a high value on urban ministry and making disciples in that context, and then also church planting, being part of helping to start many other churches as well. So that was very appealing to me, the challenge and the opportunity of that, and we moved down to the Twin Cities in the summer of 2007. Is when we eventually got down here. And right when we were on site living here in the Twin Cities, started to recruit and gather a core team for a future church plant in the city that was reaching all types of people, but especially young adults, and was seeking to train up leaders and then also be part of helping to start new churches. So that was kind of the roots of Antioch in 2007. Gathered a team of all different types of people and then trained what we called a core team of 14 men and women and launched public services October 19th of 2008.
That's so crazy that it was that long ago. But I got to be on that core team.
That you were on that core team doing yeah. training in our basement with that old blue carpet.
That blue carpet with an 8-month-old Luke yeah. holding your giant Bible. Long I have time a picture of him with curly, the curliest hair ever, which he still has, which is awesome. So how, it's been 15 years since that vision was initially cast. In what ways do you feel like Antioch has remained the same? And in what ways do you feel like it's changed or evolved over those? Because a lot has happened in those 15 years.
Yeah, well, it's, when you think about, you know, the 15 years is a long time in any church setting and for any church plant.
Yeah.
But when I think about, for instance, comparing the two church plants that I have been able to be involved in planting, one rural, one urban, the urban church plant, Antioch, in an urban area, you know, in the city, and then especially when you have a lot of young adults mm-hmm. and young married families, college students, you just have a high amount of turnover. So over the course of 15 years, it really seems like it's been 4 or 5 different churches, mm-hmm. just with the amount of people that have come and gone, and not always for bad reasons.
Right.
But a lot of times just life takes people different places with jobs and relationships and different things that come up. So, it's been, that's the first thing that strikes me about just the 15 years, that it seems like multiple churches during that time with the different groups of people. And we hosted led a community group for many, many years, my wife, Sarah, and I. And I mean, over the course of that time, with sending out new groups and bringing new people into the group, I mean, really, it was also like 4 or 5 different community groups over the years. It
seems like, but. For sure. And yet, the core values and our mission statement, the core values have remained the same. Our mission statement has maybe changed each year, even. But the overall mission has remained. How challenging has that been to keep the vision the same when the turnover and everything else is so high?
Yeah, I you know, I don't think the maintain, like casting the vision and the mission of what we're about at Antioch, it hasn't been as challenging as trying to train up leaders, have leaders in place, mm-hmm. mobilize volunteers, the resources required to work at trying to accomplish that mission and vision, and work out, you know, the different strategies and the programs, and whether it's, you know, kids ministry or different ministry teams on Sunday mornings or community group leaders, mobilizing volunteers, I think, is challenging when you have a high transition.
Yeah, keeping people in the leadership pipeline.
Yep.
From volunteers
to
church planners.
Yeah, and at the same time, we've always really embraced the value of sending people out, raising people and up and sending them out, and seeing multiplication and sending as one of the marks of success, not just growing large and keeping everybody here or around Antioch, but being willing to pour into people and then release them and let them go. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's always been something that we've been deeply committed to. But when you release people, it leaves a void, right, that you've poured into.
For sure.
And I think one of the highlights, but one of the harder things that we've had over the years was sending out a church planting team in 2014 out of Antioch, a church planter and family that we had poured into and developed in a church planting residency. And then, if I remember right, around 25 adults that went with that team to plant in St. Louis Park.
Yeah, it was like a fifth of our church at the time, wasn't
I mean, we were a church of 125 or so, and you know, it was we really felt it. Mm-hmm. And I think you remember, you were here, we underestimated the emotional impact of, wow, now these people are gone.
Right.
You know, kids that others saw in the nursery aren't there anymore. And it's bittersweet, right? It's exciting because we're sending people out to reach more people with the gospel, but at the same time, it's hard because it leaves a void. And that's just one of the bittersweet aspects of multiplication, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right that the church plant, sending out the Petersons and that core team, was so awesome. It was a huge high point in kind of like growing up. Like, we did it. We like did what we set out to do. We've been trying to raise up leaders and send them out, and look, we're doing it. And then that following Sunday was like, where'd everybody go? And like, oh, we didn't think about this part. And we talked about it, but you can't really experience it until you're in it. But kind of on that vein of those high points, like, what are some of the highlights from your life in vocational ministry, Antioch or in Glenwood or wherever else?
Yeah, I think a definite highlight wherever it's been is, for me, always seeing lives that are changed and transformed through coming to know Jesus. So seeing people come to faith, for sure. But then also seeing people take significant steps of growth, or victory over sin in their life, or restored relationships, you know, whatever those might be, friendships, family, marriage, seeing life transformation, you know, it has always been at the top through the power of the gospel. You know, I think of specific examples of that, people come to mind, but one of the things that's special about being in a place for a longer amount of time is you get to see more of the fruit of that. Mm. So people that have come to Christ, growing in Christ, maybe start dating, then get engaged and being part of their, you know, premarital, part of their wedding, and then they're having children. We recently had the opportunity just this, a couple months ago, a month and a half ago, to baptize a girl of a couple that my wife and I did premarital for.
Yeah.
I mean, like 13 years ago or something. And now, you know, they have a large family and we're baptizing their kids. I mean, that's one of the sweet things about being in a place for a long enough time where you can see even the fruit of generational impact of following Jesus. So high points for sure have been lives being transformed and relationships being restored, people just establishing a legacy for the gospel that'll go forward into the future.
For sure. I can even speak to that. I mean, for myself, like, I was a Christian when I met you and come to Christ, was joined the team and stuff. But I mean, you, in the very first community group, we started talking about some of the basics of faith. And that was where it came up that I had actually never been baptized, not out of any conviction, just kind of laziness about it. And so it was like, it was you or the group that was like, well, is there a statute of limitations on obedience, or are you going to do this? So you baptized me. You did not do our premarital counseling because you were also my boss, and we thought that was weird. But you did marry. marry John and I.
Did the wedding ceremony.
You did the wedding.
On my sabbatical, actually. It's but true. It was totally worth it to do that.
That is love. And then you've dedicated Dax. Yep. You know, I just think, and you've baptized John too, my husband, long before we were dating. He got baptized here too. So, I mean, even, I don't even think of it as like, oh, my whole life. But when you think of it in terms of events, like that's a lot of life events. Yeah.
And I mean, the generational impact you were talking about, long after you are done serving as a pastor at Antioch, that impact of how God has used you in the lives of people here will continue as they meet new people, as they have kids. We always talk about we want to be a family of servant missionaries who make disciples. And I think that's one way we can see that is the impact that you as one person can make on so many lives that can then hopefully continue that call of the Great Commission to make more disciples, whether that be discipleship in homes or in community groups or hopefully outside of the doors of Antioch in the future as well. So that's pretty cool to see. Yeah, so as a follow-up question then, discipling people is not always easy because people are messy. and, you know, doing the good work of the gospel in a broken world is hard. And there's toil and there's chaos to deal with. So in the work of vocational ministry then, what are some of the hardest parts of doing that work that you've experienced?
Yeah. I think a few things come to mind. I think you guys will probably resonate with this too, having been in ministry as well. One of the hardest things is watching people make choices to pursue some sinful path, or watching people make destructive choices in their life, and you know, you can't make someone pursue Christ. You can't make somebody choose the right path. But you know, just seeing people over and over again make destructive choices, and it's like watching a train wreck, right? Mm-hmm. And crying out to God, and but knowing that, right, I can be here for you. I can tell you the truth. I can plead with you to not make this bad choice, but ultimately, like, you have to choose to either obey God or not, you know. So that's for sure one of the hardest things. And I think a lot of the other things that are really hard about vocational ministry or pastoral ministry, they're things that we see even in the life of Jesus. So it's not super surprising that following the path of Jesus as a leader, as a humble servant leader, that you're going to do just what he said. It's a path of taking up your cross and following him, right? So you see, when you're in vocational ministry, especially in the local church, you see a lot of things that other people don't see. You see the underbelly of the congregation, right? You see, I mean, there's a lot of brokenness. There's a lot of hurt. There's just a lot of brokenness. It's a dark world. It's a world that's broken by sin all around us. Not even, you know, not just outside there, you know, outside of the church walls, but all of us within the church are dealing with different aspects of brokenness. And I think one of the things that's hard over, you know, the years and decades when you're in that kind of environment is it's easy to, I don't know how to put it, but you can be overcome by the darkness. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not careful, you can get in an unhealthy place where you're taking that stuff that you're dealing with or seeing, taking it upon yourself in your own life, internalizing it, the emotional baggage associated with those things. Yeah, I don't really know how to describe it, but it just, it piles up and it can weigh you down. I mean, I think of, I could never do this, and I have a great respect for somebody that's has, you know, 25 counseling sessions in a week, you know, a professional clinical counselor, and being able to like go home and leave that there and just go, like,
go to soccer practice.
Go, yeah, go up and go and pick your kids up from soccer or whatever. And you know, so yeah, shutting it off and not that you should like totally be shutting it off, but shutting it off to a place where you can still like engage with your family and life outside of the vocational ministry world when you're dealing with like heavy, heavy things all the time, that gets, that's wearing. So that's one of the hardest parts for sure.
Yeah. I think it's a muscle that you grow in learning. It's part of learning that you're not God, that like, I can't save everybody. I can't fix everybody's problems.
Yep.
But it's also a muscle to learn how to differentiate and separate yourself from everybody else's stuff.
Yeah.
But then it can be exhausting to even use that muscle. To like force yourself to walk away mentally from it for a time, or yeah, I think it can be tempting to feel like, well, if when things are really dark and heavy,
right?
Like, well, I shouldn't be having fun right now, or I shouldn't, you know, because there's still this stuff going on.
But, right, right. And I think personally, some of the hardest things that I've been through, or that my wife Sarah and I have been through, have been things that we've been blindsided by with stuff in people's lives, or, you know, betrayal, or some type of a secret life that comes out, and that stuff just kinds of that sort of thing knocks you down, you know.
For sure.
And I mean, the church is a body, right? And yep. So when one part of the body is hurting or broken, the whole body is affected, and you being a part of that body that has the spiritual gift of shepherding that you've been called to use, I'm sure that can be really weighty, to think, well, how do I shepherd in these moments where things seem so dark and so broken?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, because of that reality, that's one of the reasons why on our elder team, one of the things we really highly value and try to practice is sharing the load of shepherding together. Mm-hmm. So no one deals with a heavy crisis situation alone. We're supporting one another. We're shepherding one another on that, on this leadership team, as we seek to shepherd others. Because when you're trying to do it, when you're trying to shepherd in difficult situations alone and isolated, that can be dangerous in a lot of ways.
Sure. I think sometimes in those dark moments is also though when you get to see like the coolest breakthroughs, or like really see God at work. So there's kind of three H's, if it, anyone is hasn't noticed already. We're hitting three H's: the high points, the hard times, but then this third one is the hand of God. As you think back to the last 15 years, like, how have you seen, what are some of the moments where you've seen God really come through? For lack of a, we know he's always working, but where would you say, oh yeah, that was the hand of God?
Yeah, I mean, I think of, you know, different early on, the first year or year and a half or so, we had a situation where some of our, a major part of our funding fell through, when I was raising support, and the associate pastor that we had at the time, we were both raising some support, and it turned out that we needed to each raise 50%, of our salary, and we had like 2 months to do it because some funding came through. So I mean, that was a definite crying out to God moment where we were able to do that, and God provided. And we had a lot of those types of moments over the years where God provided in different ways. Moving into the facility that we're in now here at the Waterbury Building in Northeast Minneapolis, God provided in huge ways to mobilize people to give towards the build out that we needed to do for the space that we're in. And then also the increase in monthly rent. And it wasn't just the best part of that wasn't just the money that was given. It was seeing people really grow through the giving that they were doing and mm-hmm. engaging in the mission. And I think a lot of people really grew together within our church family through that whole experience, and giving of their time too, whether it was demo or painting or just different volunteer.
How many hours do you think you spent painting these walls?
Probably 100. January and February of 2018, I probably worked 200 hours on construction.
This place was covered in prayer, quite literally too.
Yeah,
I believe on a lot of the studs and things that were built.
Yep,
prayers were written on a lot of the walls of this church. So I think that's pretty cool too, that now we can see how God has sovereignly ordained, like in the kids ministry area, there's prayers written in the walls, but also for the kids of this church. But now we can see kids being raised to know and love Christ in that space too.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Well, as you're moving into the marketplace now, I mean, you're not going to be Pastor Andy. You're just going to be Andy. I don't know. Is that, can we still call you Pastor? I don't know what the rules will be.
You will forever be CrossFit Pastor.
Oh,
CrossFit
boy.
Pastor. Yes. But as you're moving out of vocational ministry, what are you excited about as it relates to being in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think I've always had a very high value, and especially in the last 10 years, on integrating faith in work, living out the gospel in the workplace. And there's a lot of unique opportunities you can have in the marketplace, in the world, the work world outside of vocational ministry, where there's opportunities to interact with people that you normally wouldn't mm-hmm. working in church ministry. So I think that's one of the things I'm most excited about, living out my faith in Christ in a different context around different people, whether that's with coworkers or customers or clients that I'm interacting with. And there's already been some opportunities to do that type of thing. So
that's awesome. Is there anything you're apprehensive about?
About being in the marketplace, you mean, or
not being in vocational ministry? Maybe that's a
different question.
When's the last time you had a normal job?
Fine, normal.
Yeah, not well, pastoraling.
Yeah, I guess that's something I'm apprehensive about. I mean, I've been in vocational ministry for 20 years. That's been my training.
Yeah.
Undergraduate degree, two different master's degrees. I mean, they're all geared towards vocational ministry. And then, there are a lot of things that I've done in the church world that are transferable to the marketplace, whether it's training leaders, managing people, overseeing organizations, budgets, vision, direction, leadership, that type of thing, mm-hmm. public speaking. But it is a little scary to step into a totally new realm with a sharp learning curve in a different environment, and just wondering, can I do this? or, you know, the temptation is going to be, temptation is always going to be there to go back to what you know, because it's just too hard on the learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So that being said, then you're not just a pastor, you're a member of Antioch as well. So how can we, as your church family, be supporting you and your family during this time?
You know, I think the biggest thing is to reach out and check in with the rest of my family, I think. Because they don't get that often. I'm just around more of the leaders and the staff at the church, and but they you know, the transition and, you know, leaving affects them too. Like, my kids have always been pastor's kids, and my wife has always been either a pastor's daughter or a pastor's wife. And now this will be the first time that that's ever been different.
Yeah. Well, I think recently I was looking at a document that we have in one of our files here of all the sermons that you have preached over your tenure at Antioch. And I think by the end of this month, you'll be at like 675 sermons.
Wow.
That you have preached at Antioch, which is quite a few. And over that time, I mean, God has just allowed you to bring to light so much gospel truth for the people that are currently in Antioch and those who have attended over the years. So this is a pretty big question, but if there's one thing that you hoped Antioch would remember from all that you've taught or said, what would it be?
You know, it's really a simple answer. I think the one thing that I would want to leave is for people is to keep their eyes on Jesus, to keep focused on him, growing in him, loving him, wanting to know him more. That's what it's all about, you know. So not me as a leader or some clever word of wisdom that I had, or even a, you know, a powerful sermon series or something like that. But I think just to keep whatever you're doing, wherever you are, just to keep your eyes on Jesus would be my parting words.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah. Antioch, like we've mentioned, Andy will still be around, but if you want to reach out to him before he's no longer on staff for another month, you can contact him at andy@antiochcommunity.org. After October 30th, those will probably go to Rachel, and she will forward them on to his new personal account, which I don't even know. I should probably get that in my contacts here soon.
And speaking of October 30th,
yes,
this episode will come out before then. Don't forget Antioch that on October 30th. That'll be obviously the last sermon we get to hear from Pastor Andy at that time. But we'll be having a lunch after the service that day to love on Andy and his family, like you shared.
Sweet. So that is it for this podcast. We'll see you guys next time. God bless.
Jack.
Before we go, we want to invite you to help us celebrate Andy. Please record a video of 1 minute or less sharing something you want to remember or something you want to thank Andy for. Send them to Rachel or myself, and we will put them together for a slideshow on October 30th.
This has been the Life in the City podcast, brought to you by Antioch Community Church in Northeast Minneapolis. Join our worship service at 10 a.m. on Sundays in the Waterbury Building, or contact us at podcast@antiochcommunity.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.